next 900 episodes will be as entertaining as the last 900 were. Certainly, they'll be more entertaining than Bold and the Beautiful was this last week, which takes us to the beginning of this week's discussion. So, Josh, what did you think of Bold and the Beautiful this last week and degenderizing of a cat?
Oh, yeah, I'm not sure about that cat. But I have a real hard time with a storyline that focuses on three newbies, even if you slap familiar last names on two of them. There are three new characters that are the focus of this show outside of Liam, Steffi, and Hope and those babies. But I will say, I don't really love Xander and Emma. I thought they could have crossed Charlie and Shauna over from Young and the Restless for the storyline. The Zoe girl, if she wasn't in with three, wasn't like three newbies, I wouldn't mind her because it's just too much new stuff happening. Otherwise, it's okay. That fashion show was kind of laughable, sort of.
My fashion show experience is America's Next Top Model, so I have nothing to base a good fashion show or a bad one on.
Miss J would not have been happy with that. It was frustrating to watch Brooke Logan continue to not have anything to say, but, oh, Liam, you're going to have Liam's baby. You're going to have Liam's baby. Oh, you're going to have Liam's baby. And then Bill try to act like Muhammad Ali. It's a mess. It's just a big mess. And I'm not happy with it. But it's a consistent mess. There's nothing. It's at least everybody's acting like folks supposed to act on Bold and the Beautiful, but it's still a mess.
It's consistently a mess from the M to the S. Jillian, what did you think of the Bold and the Beautiful this last week?
I'm going to talk about the positive first, and then I'm just going to hit what I didn't like. I think the young lady who plays Zoe is a good, I think she's a good find. I think she was, you know, even though the storyline is a dud, she is she's hilarious and she can hold her own. Now that's the only positive that I had, because I'm just sitting there and I'm like, Brooke Logan is playing the Greek chorus to this Hope, Liam, Steffi remix again. Like, I was just kind of like, it had me hollering that that Brooke was just like, you know, you should be with Hope because she's loyal. She would never sleep with your daddy. I'm like, you know, that's kind of funny, but at the same time, I'm like, Liam, listen to her, because that's the hoe that would do it. But she trying to tell you something, like, you know, show hoe know a hoe. But I'm like, they need to do something else besides worry about Steffi and Hope's love life. I thought that the whole reveal on Zoe being the stalker, crazy stalker, was just ridiculous. They're trying to mix, I see you, Brad, you're trying to mix the Young and the Restless with her petting that cat. You think she is Patty? Ain't nobody could do that like Patty Williams. Can nobody do that like Stacey Hyde? So don't you do it. I thought, nice try. That girl, oh my God, the girl who plays Emma, I don't care what show she used to be on. I heard she used to be on Dance Moms. Wasn't she on Dance Moms?
Yeah.
I don't care. I don't care. That show is not relevant anymore because they ain't that woman a jailbird. I don't care. I don't care. That girl cannot act. When she went up in that boy's face and was like, I want to call her out for stalking me. I was like, girl, she should call you out for your bad acting. When they went to that beach house, like the Scooby-Doo gang, to unmask this week's, you know, psychopath, you did it. You're stalking me. I'm like, oh my God. The acting was terrible. This is what y'all brought Ingo Rademacher on for. This is what y'all got Heather.
It's a shame.
This is what, forget him. This is what y'all got Heather Tom doing. Y'all busted up Heather Tom from Darren Brooks' orbit to be acting like the den mama for when the Scooby-Doo gang act a fool up at the Forrester High School. Like, I don't care about them. I do not care about them.
I've missed you people.
Oh my God. Like,
you know that Jamie's about to tell us how much he loved The Bold and the Beautiful.
It was terrible. I'm really disappointed in Brad and all this. The storyline could have been so much hotter if, you know, Sally and Thorne were teaming up to bust up Katie and Wyatt, or they used them as beards to pull one over on Bill, but they fell for them. Like, this was just the storyline. This B&B is just a hot ass mess. I mean,
I'm sorry.
No, go.
I was gonna say, or even if she had actually been stalking, there were two negative comments that nobody in a real company would have ever noticed.
Come on, she was hiding behind the clothing rack. That screams stalker to me.
Oh.
Mike, what were your thoughts on this wonderful, wonderful world of Brad Bell's Bold and the Beautiful this last week?
Well, okay, here's the thing. While
Can
we
you
were
drop
not
the F-bomb again?
While we were not podcasting, I did not watch it. So, knowing we're going to podcast, I started watching last week, and within the two-week period that I stopped watching, there were three new characters who had taken over the show. I didn't know who Xander was. I didn't know who Emma was, except she was an intern.
Emma
I didn't
don't know who Snowy she was. Is.
All I'm saying is that is a problem. That's like Soap 101. You don't cram all these new people. And I know it's summertime and it's the summer of youth, yada, yada. That's one thing. The Hope, Steffi, Liam is just Liam getting both of them pregnant at pretty much at the same time. Well, not at the same time. That was months apart. But anyway, is that whole thing where it frustrates me that women latch onto somebody who can't make up their mind when both women are clearly stronger. That doesn't really work in 2018 for me. I feel like Thorne is a forester, and he's taking orders as a designer from Hope, who is a Logan. And as much as Brooke's presence in that company is well known and deserved, Thorne should be in Ridge's orbit, or maybe even having conflict with Hope. I don't know. There's just, to me, the show is missing conflict and hate. Where is Quinn been? I mean, I saw the dark-haired woman at the fashion show, and it took me a second to realize that was Quinn because she hasn't been on. There's no conflict. Like, Steffi should have exposed Hope and for sleeping with Liam, her soon-to-be husband, in front of all of those people at the fashion show.
How
I mean, there should be some
– it's the How she
it's
could expose somebody when she hold that boy's father?
It doesn't
like,
matter.
You know,
see, that's
yes,
the hypocrisy. That's a hypocrisy of a soap character, though. Steffi's moment would be to take Hope down in that moment, and then Bill has the power of the press behind him, where he could have trashed Hope and Liam right in the. I don't. It just seems like the resources are there, but they're rushing through everything so quickly that you just don't really have time to savor how good it's just like missed opportunities, I guess. And
if Steffi was to expose Hope,
it was just a fleeting thought. I'm just saying there's
I'm just saying. I mean,
but I just know that like
I
next
get what
week,
you're saying,
Steffi's
but
actually take some action next week. So
I get what you're saying, but I'm just rebuttaling what you're saying. Don't get tight now. I'm saying like if he was to expose her, that would be good. But then, you know, it would then they would be like, why would you do that, Hope? And Hope be like, because that bitch slept with his daddy. That's why I did it. And
well,
they would bust
it up. I mean, that's the thing. There's no open.
It would be better if the two of them were saying that stuff to each other.
Quinn's
Brooke is the only one. Brooke and Bill are the only ones, you know, telegraphing all of that, while Steffi and Hope are like, still acting like they can be friendly sister wives.
They're acting like the boy is mine, like this the white version of the boy is mine. Y'all are not Monica and Sally.
I thought I was watching Big Love this
Sally
last
were
week.
Pissed off at Wyatt for, you know, doing his thing. I just think there's no conflict. There's everybody gets along, and it's kind of boring.
There was
Jamie?
One. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead, Josh. Go ahead.
I was going to say there's one funny moment last week that because there's so few and far between. Last week, when Quinn was backstage and yelled at Hope to make a damn decision, when the girl hurt her ankle and they had to put Zoe in, Rena Sofer looked over at Aguko and went, "Make a damn decision." And I thought, I laughed out loud. And it was the only time the entire week that I laughed out loud. Sorry.
Jamie, we know you have a soft spot for Bold and the Beautiful and your beloved Brooke. What did you think of B&B?
So my soft spot is mostly that it's consistently what it's always been. Now, what I will say is, and this is something Brad has always been applauded for in the soap press, that he can turn a show on a dime now to something new. Now, yes, I will agree that this was super duper fast. It's like the realities of the situation that he found himself in was that Rome Flynn left the show. He booked two new shows, How to Get Away with Murder, and he's doing an arc on the haves and the have-nots. So he was without his young, hot, black eye candy. So Rainn Edwards, who was tied to that character, which he, you know, in theory, he could have, you know, broken them up and kept Rainn Edwards as Nicole, but he kind of sent them off together, and, you know, the Sasha character was gone a while before that. But Jillian pointed out, we were on a conversation, a phone call, that they're basically bots. You know, it's a Zenday bot, it's a Sasha bot, and a Nicole bot. But I will say this. I'm going to give Brad Bell major credit and major kudos, because as a black man who loves soap operas, yeah, they brand spanking newbies, but I must say I got quite tickled that the three Negroes in SoCal were front burner all week long. The new Negro from the UK got to be the showstopper. That used to be reserved for Brooke Logan. So I felt it was very retro Bold, only that Brad is taking the type of story that Bold would have done in 6 months, and he did it in like 2 weeks. It's like, boom, these new people get to town. Boom, there's a stalker. Boom, the girlfriend is over there painting a mural for Wyatt, which Wyatt was shading that mural. I'm like, that's a damn good mural. Don't shade. Don't shade.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it was kind of funny, like what Jillian mentioned earlier. That is definitely I didn't think of it as a negative, but I kind of got tickled at the fact that Heather Tom and Ingo Rademacher and even Darren Brooks are basically babysitting this, you know, young adult story. Because it's like, these are some heavy hitters, and they're all pretty much facilitating the newbie story. But I will say, when you say things like, or Luke, I think you said it, this is Ingo Rademacher, and, you know, look who they've got him working. And it's like,
No, that's me. That was me.
They have all worked with green people before. You know, Ingo was at an era of GH with Ricky Martin and Lily Maldonado.
Yeah, but
they all, in the summertime, soaps would always put a bunch of, and Bold was either, however you look at it, the best or the worst. Remember when they introduced Eric's niece, Jessica, and then at the same time as she hit town, she fell in love with this cat named Dylan, who was, surprise, a Forrester intern. And then the next thing you know, Lisa Turtle from Saved by the Bell is designing on the show. And then there was that pervert one who was trying to rape everybody and stuff. And before you knew it, it was like 10 new people all revolving around this Jessica character. It's kind of the same, you know, template that they've kind of always done. I think they did it super fast, but I will say that it's kind of refreshing that whereas it used to be, oh, token Lisa Turtle or whatever her name was on that show, that it's three black people. I'm like, yes, because the rest of daytime is not valuing their black characters in a lot of ways. Now, I will say that doesn't, you know, that you can't throw out the rules of bring on the newbie slowly. I mean, they did tie Emma is Justin's niece. That's classic Belle. Cricket Blair was the niece of the photographer at Jabot when she was introduced. Xander is an Avant. You know, Mamie two of Mamie's nieces came to town and took, you know, they didn't take over the show because the show was very well rounded at that time. But, you know, Drew and Olivia got a lot of airtime pretty fast, and they were new. Now, yeah, they weren't getting front burner, but then both
they were woven in better, I guess.
They definitely were, and they also were on hour-long shows as opposed to 20-minute shows. I think Brad just did a really fast, you know. I will say this, though, because one thing we've always complained about is this genre realizing how prominent African Americans make 10% of this country, but we're 40 to 50% of daytime viewers. Yet we are still treated like, you know, the young and the rest of us on So I will give Brad his credit. Yes, maybe playing Emma can't act, but I've seen a whole bunch of white girls that had to learn how to act on these airwaves too. So I'm okay with the sister getting her chance to learn how to act. Just like some of the other ones that Olivia Rose Keegan been on the story, what, 2-3 years?
Oh, my God. Oh.
Playing Emma can act just as well as she can, and she just been off the Dance Moms. Now, I did have my same funny things that, like, y'all talk about. What has always been hilarious to me with Bold is their fashion stopped being cutting edge after the 80s because – I'm like, why is Hope for the Future getting relaunched with these blue jeans and these white
culottes and
that fringe?
Tell nobody want to wear that ugly stuff. But and then that showstopper, and I'm like, okay, I want to know. Forget what's that baby name? Zoe being a damn artist, she needs to open a hair salon because she saw that hair, and you came to that show with your hair pressed and laid for the gods by yourself. Oh, I can walk. Like, it is what it is. They're cute, but, you know, they're not the greatest thespians. But who is when they first joined daytime?
Yeah, and I guess I should clarify that my thing isn't really with I don't have that gripe that a lot of soap fans have about newbies and young people. I think it's important to have young people on. I think it's important to bring new people on and try to integrate them a little bit with the existing crew. I don't have issues with that. I think it's really important for soaps to be able to move forward with new characters and young people. That's
And you know, I love Brooke. Brooke is my all-time favorite Bold character.
Get
but
out.
Brooke is living her former mother-in-law's life out for her. I mean, when I heard her saying that stuff to Liam, which I thought KKL was so great, and they did, she touched on her history. She's like, look, I can speak to this because I've done some untrustworthy things or whatever she said, but her berating Liam about his choice is dead on to Stephanie. Every time Ridge had to make that choice, Stephanie was right there. This is the type of woman you want to be your wife. Ridge, think about it. This is the woman you want to raise a family with. Now, she would scream it at the fool. You know, Stephanie would talk sweet to you 1 minute and then be pounding her fist. You know, this is the type of woman you want to. You'll be a mom, but what about Brooke and Rick? And what are we going to do about Bridget? She thinks of me as her father. Those are your father's children. You'll be there for those kids, but you need to be there with Taylor and Thomas. Like, Brooke was doing the same thing to Liam. Mm. You know, and Liam, you know, now Scott Clifton, he is the modern day to this equivalent for this show to what Ron Moss was. Now, where Brad lacks his father's sexy sensibilities, that's the one thing. Brad has this incestuous show where everybody screws everybody, but there's still this ridiculous undercurrent of 1950s morality. We're gonna have a baby together. We need to be married. That drives me crazy. The sexiness of the Bold and the Beautiful is what I miss. I miss the forest. Remember when Brooke came out there and did her showstopper 1 year to I'm Too Sexy and a Pet?
Yes.
It was mad as hell. You know, and Brooke was butt-ass naked for daytime. I'm going to be real. They used to push the envelope back in the day. Now those clothes need to be put in an envelope and nailed.
Said that B&B should do a tie-in with Fit 'Em because Fit 'Em is out there. Have as a final project somebody from one of, you know, the class, you know, as a final class project, they design, they do like a, they design clothes or something for them for like their fashion show, and that could be tied in there. Cause good God,
they
I don't want to buy
so
nothing.
Much buzz from that too. That would be great. You know, just Jillian? Really incorporate the LA fashion scene more. And, you know, yeah, but yeah, I didn't have the same issues that everyone has because, you know, a lot of the issues that I noticed y'all, not, you know, Mike and Luke have, I'm like, well, would y'all have liked Bold ever? Because a lot of those, the triangles, a lot of that stuff, that's always been Bold.
Jillian, last podcast, we talked about Dominic Zampagna and how his exit was not well handled, and now we have Michelle Morgan leaving The Young and the Restless, and I feel like she's getting the Dominic Zampagna treatment. To me, it feels like she is being rushed off. I feel like, why is she being killed? Why is the character being killed off when so many other characters leave without being killed off? She's one of the most dynamic actresses the show has had in newcomers, and yet I feel like she's getting not well served. What are your thoughts
on
her?
I see you still ask these multiple choice questions.
Yes, he does.
I told you I was going to do that, considering you were comparing me to Roseanne. go ahead,
I was
Jillian.
Comparing myself to Roseanne.
Ahead.
No, let's no. I have to tell. So y'all
to a Roseanne
y'all see
clip.
This Roseanne? Look, y'all know I'm done with Roseanne. Been done with her, but in her latest meltdown, some producer is asking her a question, and you know she's supposed to be clarifying her racist tweet, right? So the producer is asking this multiple choice question, and Roseanne is grabbing her hair and sighing and acting crazy, and then finally she just starts screaming obscenities, and I'm like, this video captures.
That's her Luke. Yeah, that's her Luke behind the scenes. Okay.
And then she just look. See, I'm like, is Roseanne crazy or is there a Luke Kerr that just keeps pushing her to that moment to where she just screams out, I thought the bleep was white!
Jillian, what are your thoughts on Michelle Morgan's
exit?
Okay,
I don't think it's the Dominic Zampagna theme because Dominic, they didn't give him a true send-off. I feel as though you could tell the shift. Well, I will agree with you what this is. You can tell the shift. Like, they were building something up, and then all of a sudden, Hillary's going around town talking to people secretly, and don't put off what tomorrow, what you could do today. And you're like, what the hell is she talking about? And then, boom, she gets hit by a car. And that pisses me off because, you know, I've had so many people tell me, you know, on British shows, they don't recast you. I'm like, oh, but on British shows, they don't have masks, but they got Nick Newman ass running around with a flipping mask. I said, okay, they could do that, though. That's
my, mask.
Yes, that's the part that pisses me off. I understand that y'all are kind of tight that Michelle decided to take her ball and go home because y'all didn't want to give her what she was due, in my opinion. Y'all have all right to be mad, but to take that out on the character, that's just ridiculous. And you're cutting off your nose to spite your face. They should have had, this could have been executed differently. It could have been a situation where she did get injured and she just decides that she's, you know, Lily lies, her funky little ass lies about that accident, and nobody believes Hillary, and Hillary just gets pissed off, and she goes somewhere, and she has that kid, and she comes back with revenge or something, or they put her in a coma, and then they recast her. They didn't have to do that. I just thought that was just so... I guess y'all, they're trying to go for an Emmy too, also doing that, but I just thought that was just such, like, ugh, that just,
Josh,
it was just...
I hear you agreeing with Jillian. Okay.
They missed that opportunity for an Emmy. Oh, yikes.
They didn't have to kill that character off. They just went to the extreme. You could tell it was rushed. I mean, you could smell that, huh, and Nate Jr. were gonna go there, and then they just shifted and just ran off on old Decatur Road like how they did with stupid ass.
Yeah.
Josh, what are your thoughts?
You could definitely see I ditto everything Jillian said. I Michelle Morgan is amazing, so whatever they put her in, it's amazing. It's just, and the fights with her and Lily leading up to the accident and the well-shot accident, I thought, were, that's little things I can pick out and say are good, but the overall storyline, it's ridiculous. Hillary is, again, like, it's just a, it's, I know it's an echo in here when we say this, but it's just, she's the star, she should be the star of the show. She should be the center of the show, and you just killed her.
They have Lily getting off with this scot-free. They have King worried about, oh, what this is going to do to Lily. I'm like, yo, bitch-ass wife got her ran off the road, and she killed her baby, and she killed Hillary. If they don't
He wants Charlie to lie.
If they do not have Shauna going out for her for blood, I'm a piss because Lily needs to have some sort of comeuppance. Lily needs to get a pony wagon, needs to be fixed. I'm so tired. Even on Hillary's deathbed, Lily's still the victim in all this. I'm like, are you serious? She needs to be like, Charlie needs to flip out on his dad and be like, it's because of mom being overreacting that Hillary's like this, and for him to just spill all that tea down to, and she said Hillary shouldn't have kids, Uncle Devon, and Devon to be like, bitch, what? Like, I'm so, they get on my nerves.
And this is the opportunity, if they're going to do this, to really deconstruct Lily's character. Like, they could really take her down a path where she is consumed with guilt and everybody rejects her, and Lily, perfect Lily, is finding herself at a crossroads in her life. They could really do some work with this character and start those kids off on their way, because those twins need to start being bad. And there could really be a moment, if they're going to do this with Hillary, which they're clearly going to do, then use it. Don't have it be a month later and everybody's like, la-di-da, it's all gone. Who cares?
Shauna needs to give that girl hell.
Yeah. I think they had that opportunity when Kane brought Sam home, that Lily wouldn't like the kid, the baby. But they just went through that whole thing where everything was all forgiven and they're a big, happy family again. But
do you really think they're going to make Lily an evil stepmom to
Lily
fans?
That's
not what I said.
Well, no, but like, if you make it so that Lily doesn't like the other child, I mean, that's where you're headed interpretation.
No, it's not.
What I meant was she didn't have to dislike the kid in a literal sense. She could have issues with dealing with the kid.
It could be like Monica with Jason, where it took her a good, 2 years or so, or however long.
Yeah. The kid didn't like her. The kid didn't bond with her. Whatever it was, there had to be something.
They started to
really
do that. They started down that road with the kid only bonding with Hillary and Lily lying, I got to go to work, so she didn't have to be around that kid. And then everything was all forgotten. So,
you know, I want to talk about the behind the scenes a little bit, because we're going into the storyline a lot, which, of course, that's great. But I'm just going to say this. The Young and the Restless, it took them years. You know, both Shamar Moore and Victoria Rao brought a certain type of black character to this show, a certain type of very, you know, recognizable, iconic black character that it took them years to ever really, and many, many failed opportunities to try to duplicate that, whether it was Eva Marcel or the actress who played Sophia, or, finally, they got an actress who popped and, you know, was great, not only opposite Crystal Khalil as, you know, as the rivalry that really never quite was, because the stakes were never quite high enough, because they kept them islanded on Black People Island, where their real stakes were about things like a cable access talk show and things that really didn't matter to the rest of the canvas. But we've all said it. She was, you know, Michelle Morgan was this show's Black Erica Kane. They never recognized that. And, you know, TV Source did an interview where they talked about the negotiations. In negotiations, when an agent makes an offer, or, you know, when Sony makes an offer, the agent makes a counteroffer, and then there's a negotiation and people meet in the middle. Sony, according to that interview and according to the stuff that I've heard too, did not negotiate. Now, you know, there was this movement to make it seem like, oh, she wanted so much money. No, she wanted double, from what I heard. She wanted double, and she deserved it.
Yeah.
Because in these five or six years that she's been on this show, she is a beacon to a cornerstone of your audience. There is a reason. See, I said I wasn't going to get mad enough to scream on this one. But there's a reason that there's that Hivon hashtag and that these fans. Was anybody buying Devon any type of cookies and candy jams and flowers and flying balloons and stuff before they passed Hillary? No. I don't think anybody was ever shipping him with Rudy
Ashley Abbott.
This woman elevated, and I'm going to be real, made the Winters family watchable. And then you can take her to the pay level of Josh Morrow and Daniel Goddard and the other mid-tier stars of the show. But Sony would not negotiate. And I'm sorry, I don't cut you any slack. In this day and age, y'all going to learn. You're going to show and you're going to prove, because in this day and age, people are not continuing to watch programs that do not reflect who they are, because there are too many other options. Shonda Rhimes just got a $300 million deal to create shows where you can best believe there will be people that look like Michelle Morgan. Nobody that is black, brown, gay has to sit around and take daytime's crumbs anymore. And Jillian made a really good point. If the negotiations fell through, hey, that happens. It's Hollywood. If y'all say, we can't pay that, we're not going to pay that, but I don't understand why you didn't negotiate at all. But if you do decide, there were a myriad of ways to write this character out. You did not have to kill this character off. You have set up.
That shows they're petty. That shows they're petty.
The 3 years, you have set up her aspirations about being a talk show host. You even had her meet her idol, Julie Chen. Fine, kill off the baby. That could have been the segue out. She has this car crash. The baby dies. She is done with Devon, like, your stupid sister killed my baby. And then she gets that agent that they kept bringing on over and over again, the little dude from Married with Children or whoever, tells her that Julie Chen is, like, her production company is launching a talk show. They want to take the Hillary Curtis show national. She and Devon have a real bittersweet Casablanca moment where she's like, I'm leaving, Devon. I'm going to L.A. and I'm going to be a talk show host. You can come with me, though. And he's like, no, I got to stay here to be the third wheel of Kane and Lily. I love you, though. And then Hillary leaves, just like Drew
exactly
left.
Exactly what I was thinking.
Remember when the first time Vicky Rao left the show, they didn't kill Drew off because Bill Bell had sense. So, Drusilla left Neil because he was being all, my woman ain't supposed to be working outside the house. And she's like, I'm a supermodel and they are trying to get me to Paris. And so she took Lily and left for Paris. Hillary could have left and gone on to become a talk show host. And then, 6 months later, Michelle Morgan, things change. We see it all the time. 6 months later, cooler heads could prevail. They could come back to the negotiation table, which is why it's not like Dominic Zampronia. Because if Dominic wants to come back in 6 months, Dante is still out there on a case. But you're killing Lily. I mean, you're killing. And what bothers me about this thing, this is what y'all were talking about is exactly what's happening. You've got half the audience now mad at the only other black woman in town being responsible for the other black woman's death. It's like, y'all got us on such an island, we only can kill each other. And, it's like, that girl should have been, or not girl, she's a grown woman, but we've talked about this before, she shouldn't have just been on the Devon and Neil island night. Josh Morrow would have been hot. She and this new cow would have been hot, but they're so afraid. I'm like, we don't even see black people making love anymore. I had to look up the little boy that plays Charlie to see if he was of age, because, back in the day, we saw, Nick all up between Sharon's legs when they were teenagers and stuff. I'm like, why we got to go see Noah get his little cherry popped all off screen? He coming back downstairs, Mom, buttoning up his shirt and stuff. We couldn't even get to see the love making. We saw Lily and
My guess, and I have no idea how this fits historically, is that he's not 18 yet. I don't think
he is, though.
Are they?
Life. And so that's all that matters. If they're adults in real life,
you can still...
It's just stupid. This is just like when the little boy that played Reed, they, you know, could barely, you know, when Sally Sussman was there, she wanted to do some storylines with Reed drinking and stuff, and she got noted to death. He couldn't even drink. It's like, you do this stuff, and it's like, that's not... If you're going to make this so interesting that him getting his cherry popped led to his auntie's death, at least show that. At least show some, and, you know, and I know Mal Young doesn't like direct pickups or cliffhangers, but it's so silly, though. Even Shonda Rhimes did direct pickups. Like, there's no shame in direct pickups. That is a very usable soap trope. Now, do I think it always has to be a... I supported him in this at first, because I don't think it always has to be a direct pickup. But you kind of need a direct pickup when you have somebody take off a mask, or when you have somebody, you know, get into a car accident. You know, his...
Monday's episode with that mask made me so mad, and then by Wednesday, they had improved
the... Yeah, so I gotta go there, too, because I know that's been a topic of conversation. I made fun of it, but I don't have a problem with the mask story, and I'll tell you why. Y&R, now yes, we all, I know I was guilty of this for the longest time, of saying Y&R isn't supposed to do that type of stuff, but I can say this for the powers that be at Y&R. Yes, I would get mad when Y&R would do ridiculous stuff like that, but then I would lose my mind and geek out and laugh and think it was funny when Dazer GH did it. So in this day where everybody's ratings are dwindling and Dazer's ratings are going up and away, I can see Y&R saying, well, hell, who cares that we are not supposed to do stuff like that? Because Dazer does wild, crazy stuff, and their numbers go up. And, you know, in this current last 5 years of this universe for this show, Nick's plan was brilliant. Because his dad
was
king of, I'm going to have Patty come back to town with a new face to torment Jack. I'm going to hire Sharon's doppelganger, the doppelganger of Cassie, to come back to mess with. So Nick pulled something from his daddy's playbook.
Nick pulled a victim. Nick pulled a victim.
Mad as I am at them about how they've handled the Michelle Morgan situation, and I think it's just egregious, to be honest. But this is the best Joshua Morrow storyline I have seen in a long, long time.
Let me clarify what my issues were, because on Monday, the mask coming off itself wasn't so bad. It was just that, like, the Snidely Whiplash, like, dialogue that went on and on forever on Monday, because I was watching Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday all at the same time, and Monday was like, I do not relate to anything that he has. And Josh was like, just wait, you need to watch Tuesday and Wednesday. And so by time you got to Tuesday and Wednesday, where the story is like more like, I don't even know how to put it exactly, but it seemed more in character for him by time you got to the Dark Horse, by time you had the other family scenes where it's in neutral territory. That stuff, that portion of the story resonated for me. It was just that, like, when he was on Monday's episode and he's giving this long diatribe and Victor's just there smirking at him, that, like, to me, it just felt like bullwinkle.
That wasn't a problem for me. The mask was, because I'm still maintaining why not, I don't do that bullshit, and it was bullshit. Him telling... Hold on. But his dialogue, he told Victor why he was doing that. He's letting the audience know, you didn't expect your simple son, who you can kick ass in business with, to do this. And I took a page from your book. Yeah, you can whoop my ass when it comes to business, but when it comes to them kids, all bets are off. So I did what I did.
I loved that. And it's been so ever since they sore-assed Josh into that role, it's been... He's Nikki's boy, and Victoria is his girl, is Victor's girl. So, Nicholas is too sensitive. He doesn't have the heart to do anything nasty.
No, Nicholas is too not that smart. All right, here's the thing. Nicholas has never been...
We've seen that change, so I can't even do that. When Nick started to piece things together with his father, when he was with Chelsea, And when Chloe was still on, we've seen that change. So I can't even say he's not been that smart.
I love the new Nick. Yes. I love his new badass attitude.
All right,
I love Summer's new attitude, too. Now, Nikki is getting on my last nerves. Mm-hmm. Of all of the characters on the show who should be going, well, at least I now know my son can defend me when his daddy get out of hand. Yeah, I love this old bastard. Nikki is all, how can you do this to you?
This
man told you he wished you had died instead of Sabrina and has treated you like dirt 1,000 times, booted you off that ranch that
Black
you won. He has treated you like dog poop between his toes when he was walking outside on the farm with his shoes off. Yet you are, how can you do this to your father?
I was too mad about that. Yeah.
Toria, too. I'm like, yeah, we all know that they're a little extra upset with Nick because he scared them into believing JT was back for that ass.
But
he doesn't know that he killed JT.
See, they were the ones who I felt had the most reason to be upset because of their own JT issues.
Well, the JT issues, yes, but Victoria should have, when Nick talked to her privately, Victoria should have sat there and thought, you know what, Nick is right. Because the thing that set Nick off down this path was when Victor gave Victoria's job to him. And when he found out, he was like, you still doing the same shit, pitting us against each other. And that's when Victor put
And then he took that baby out of spite. And now Bill Bell's Victor Newman wouldn't have taken that baby out of spite. He just wouldn't have. Victor, actually, my grandma used to laugh about that. J.R. Ewing would fight you about John Ross to the death. But when Victor and Nikki divorced, he was good with Nikki raising them kids on that farm with that Miguel and Jack Abbott. He was because he was over there in his penthouse parlaying and running women. Ashley, Leanna Love, you know, Hope.
Diane.
You know, he was not thinking about. Now, the only time I can remember him threatening to take custody of Nicholas and Victoria is when she was running around with that muscatel and popping pills. And he was like, oh, baby. But he has never been like there are a lot of soap characters of that patriarchal ilk. Luke's beloved Adam Chandler, J.R. Ewing, CeCe Capwell would snatch a baby. You know, all of those cats were definitely like, no, I want all my kids with me. Victor was like, no, I'm good, you know. I'm going to be over here parlaying with Brenda Epperson Ashley. And Nikki, you can be, you know, I can see the kids would be all, I really want to see my daddy for Christmas. And then we'd get a classic moment where Jack and Victor would put their differences aside so that, you know, Jack and Victor and Ashley and Nikki could share Christmas so Nicholas could be happy. And we even though we knew that was bullshit too, it was so well lit and those Christmas trees were so wonderful and the fireplace that you just didn't give a damn. That's what I will say also. Yes, Bill Bell didn't do a lot of this stuff often, but he did do wookie kooky kooky crazy stuff. I mean, Kay and Marge was wookie kooky kooky crazy. He did do it he did it sparingly though. And now they don't do it sparingly. It's like
the ratings dip. We got to do something stupid. Yeah.
Scabbit was a Latino a few years ago. So now, you know, Bill was, you know, but he did do outlandish stuff every once in a while. And, you know, there are certain soap tropes that I have just, and I know I used to scream about them on here, but Returns from the Dead, Masks, Paternity Switches, those things are going to be here to the end of the genre, and I've just become resolved to that. And, you know.
Well, the worst bit for me is that it was spoiled on Twitter, so I expected the worst. When I actually watched it, it wasn't as horrible as I thought it was going to be.
I will say that is kind of confusing me. Now, granted, as you know, we break casting, but Daytime Confidential has always tried our best not to break, you know, not to just flat out.
It's the money. That's because YNR in Canada airs a day ahead.
That's why. Because I'm like, now they're doing this thing at CBS Daytime where they're revealing the big cliffhanger.
That too.
On, you know, they're sending it out and everybody's tweeting it. So I'm like, But, you know, I mean, maybe that is the thing. They do know that no matter what.
Maybe they're just desperate because Days is doing so well.
Well, Days doesn't really come with them in a time slot, though. But I think it. I think the cat, Mike's point.
They do. Here, Days and Wyatt are be competing. Yeah, they moved Wyatt. They moved Days to 1 o'clock and Wyatt are 12:30.
Days is on the rise, but it's, you know, Y&R tends to still. Yeah, it does. Look, I have heard some intel. Now, what really frustrated. What really frustrated the Tiffany Network and the people there was Days getting all them Emmys. Get your shit. It was some activity, some high feelings, because I heard a certain executive really thought his Big Little Lies ripoff was going to just sweep. And it was like,
why?
No.
Somebody on Twitter.
That was a bad knockoff of Pretty Little Liars and Big Little Lies.
That was going to redefine the genre.
Somebody on Twitter said they think that, shout out to Tori, they think that that executive is watching, they got a HBO Go pass and they take Game of Thrones. They're like, they try to do Game of Thrones.
Because, you know, Y&R has kind of become the new GH in that every exec is set up to fail almost as soon as they get there, because if it doesn't get to be whatever people want it to be, people start calling for firings, and I don't think that's the answer. Like, I think a lot of what Mal has done has been good. But I also think that it's been at the sacrifice of beloved characters like Hillary and like JT. Sorry,
it's also a time issue, because my biggest issue with the Nick story was I can get past dumb Nick doing all this stuff, and I like the twist that Nick was actually doing it. What I disliked the most was when Nick was retelling the story and we got flashbacks of everything he did. That everything was told of how he got to this point and we never saw it. And I know that seems to be the new way to have to do a soap opera rather than actually tell the story. We can go back. Then he says, well, Jack's in it on me. Let me tell you how that happened. You know, Jack, for all I know, has been digging up bodies in the backyard of the Chancellor Mansion. So
he's been digging up bodies because there's been a story about someone who had good conversations in the afternoon at a hotel room.
Well, Jack's mama is a hoe. He just tried to find out who his daddy is.
But the whole basis for this story is the fact that she went and had good conversations at a hotel.
A good conversation with Dina Bergeron usually ended up with some legs up in the air.
She said explicitly that there are nothing ever happened, and it was all good conversation. So we have had to endure for the past how many weeks, if not months, Jack dealing with his history and how important it was and who this person could be, and then all of a sudden the payoff, at least thus far, is that there's good conversations. I almost chucked something at my TV.
No, I mean, Ashley tried to warn Jack.
No, I get that, but I'm just saying, you mean to tell me that the secret about the key and all this other stuff at the hotel is good conversation?
Well, he was also doing all this stuff with Nick. I mean, apparently that Nick and them had conversations about all this stuff that was...
Show everything that happens. I know
You know what? This is a big twist, and it was a major thing for Nick to go through all this. I need a little bit more than somebody sitting around a board table.
Wait. But main one when I talked about them not doing certain things. Oh, I don't mind. I don't like you nitpicking again. You got to pick a side. Pick a lane.
It's always been that genre that you did see every beat coming. But in this
I don't see every beat. I just would have liked to – I don't know. You know, this is a big shift for Nick, and we got nothing. There was no clue that he was doing anything except hanging out at Sharon getting back.
We did have a clip. We did have I will give Mal this, and you know I don't like to give nobody nothing when they get on my nerve. when Victor went after Christian, Nick said at the the one.
I got that.
Okay. Can I finish then? Like, damn. You were the one who just said that you never saw it. Nick said to him at the wannabe colonnade room, I am going to fight you, and I am going, like...
But that's the point of storytelling anyway, though. You're not supposed to always see it coming. That's not, you know, there are no surprises. I have no problem with them doing the flashback of how he got to here. Because if you see everything coming, there are never any surprises anymore. I don't have a problem with the fact that... Now, where they... Look, they had to do a shit ton of exposition to get us there after the fact.
I actually thought that if they had taken and actually not done the mask reveal and left JT out there as a wild card, still being a tormenting, that they could have went to the scene at Dark Horse and actually had a really good reveal and it have a lot more impact.
Here's my thing about the Dark Horse, the whole situation. I hate that JT had to be the leading, the sacrificial lamb.
Because I agree with that.
Oh, absolutely.
Sorry, you know, and a lot of people tried to sell me on it, but I'm sorry. At the end of the day, you still just ruined one of the most romantic teen hunks ever. I still will never buy that the cutie patootie boy who was sort of a bad boy, but, you know, barely spoke above. He had that Luke Perry type, you know, disaffected sex whisper.
Used to put hands on people, yeah.
The boy that played Colleen, the nice guitar, and made her panties wet and all of our panties wet, I don't believe he ever grew up to be Ike Turner. I just don't fit. And I'm
okay. Let's talk a little bit about...
The same way that I choose to believe that Vicki Hudson never went to Oakdale and she's... a happy life with her two children, Stephen and Kirk, and that there are no other children with Jake, and that she didn't die in some stupid plane crash in Oakdale. I choose to believe that JT is still a sweet, good boy who didn't lay hands on people because he wasn't an asshole. And I don't think that because Mal Young saw Big Little Lies, we had to be... you know, had to deal with this ruination of a great character. It'll be interesting because, you know, when Victoria Rao left, YNR lost a chunk of viewers. When Shamar left, I don't wish that, but I want to see what things are going to be like because people are not happy about Michelle Morgan in this situation. You could have kicked her $500 more an episode. You know, you could have met her somewhere in the damn middle and kept her. I just don't think this was smart. And again, if it couldn't be worked out, you could have written her out so that you could have reached out in 6 months and said, hey, girl, you know, how things going? How you and the new baby? Whoop-a-woo-woo-woo. You want to come back to work? You could have done that. You ain't had to back. And what about this wedding next week? Now, this new bland Dr. Nate, I don't want him being my doctor. I'll be the doctor. I'm Dr. Nate. And then he gets into this pointless argument with somebody. Oh, hello, other doctor person.
Well, he could be a doctor in a Chippendales.
He's not a good actor right now yet either. But my thing with him, though, is like he tells us, it's bad. Hillary is bad off. You know, she got an aortic cerebrium. But then you look at the promos for next week, and she's getting married to Devon. Now, look, Nick and Newman married Victor one time on her deathbed. She didn't die. She just married Victor in her hospital gown and stuff. Hillary got on a damn wedding gown. If I'm about to leave here and meet Soap Jesus, you ain't finna be stuffing my ass and my broke down body. Lily done caused me to get shrapnel in my chest. I'm not trying to get in no Lauren Fenmore wedding gown in the bed so I can marry Devon. I'm gonna be like, motherfucker, I marry your ass, but you just gonna marry me bleeding out like I'm sitting here doing. I'm not gonna put on no gown and all that. It's like
technically the story would be if it was the other way around, because if she got Devon to marry and he was the one that was gonna die, she would get all his billions.
Let's talk a little bit about Days. Josh, I saw on Twitter how you posted the difference between Abby and Ben, and I thought it was very appropriate. What were your thoughts on Ben and Sierra this last week?
I love Ben and Sierra. They could be a special little online web series by themselves. They were great. I just have an issue with the way Days treats Abigail like, oh, you shouldn't have. Oh, nothing's your fault. You killed this Andre. You put Marlena and Vivian and Kate, knocked them upside the head, hit them in a room, tried to kill them with cutting off their hair, but nothing's your fault. But Ben, everything he does is his fault. I'm not saying it's not, but
that is why we have Gabriella there to put revenge on that funky bitch. That is why she is there to rep and put revenge and bring down vengeance and anger on that hoe, and I love it.
I love it too.
Gabby's is great.
Mike?
Yes?
Mike, you and I can enjoy a good court battle. What did you think of the scenes with Teresa, JJ, and Brady and
Eve?
Well,
let me just start off by saying neither Brady nor Teresa are model parents. So Tater Tot is in trouble. I guess the thing is, what I liked about it was that Teresa's lawyer, who I actually like, Ted, got some down and dirty. And then it was kind of fun to watch because each person that came in from either side got to trash the other one and make them both look bad. But here's the thing. The story with Eve – planting the drugs has led to the return or the mention of Nicole and Brady and how he blackmailed her to leave town. And it just has opened up the next story to Nicole coming back, Chloe knowing that Eve is responsible. Teresa is leaving, folding napkins while listening to everything. And that, I don't know. It's just what Eve is going to become is the center of this thing where Brady has trusted her, and now she's going to be – and now there's Mama Jennifer coming in to take care of
her. Oh, that's
going to
be fun.
It's all going to be –
leading up to a big showdown.
Right? Mm-hmm. Sammy's coming back as well. I don't know. I just feel like the purpose of the custody hearing was to have Teresa go. And now the aftermath of everything that Eve has done to try to get that child is going to become the next focus.
It's a huge ripple effect because
somebody is not back there knitting a sweater, because that's exactly what all this yarn is coming together. And it's it was fun to watch. But Teresa, I loved her going after Brady because, you know, Brady deserves everything he gets from her because he's such
a douche.
Yes, he is. Dumb as a box of rocks.
No, but I love the fact, but this is a huge ripple effect because not only did Eve destroy Brady's life, but she destroyed JJ's life. She destroyed Teresa's life. She's about to destroy Nicole's life. Like Eve's meddling. And Victor is, we can't forget Victor. Victor did it, but Victor don't give a shit. But Eve's meddling has just caused a huge downward spiral for everyone. And it's brilliant. That's how a soap is supposed to be. Like, when and if Teresa comes back to town, Teresa needs to whoop the shit out of Eve because, like, it's bad enough that you took her man, but you tried to plant dope on her for her to lose her kid. Now, you can have the man because Brady's, like we said, Brady dumb as a box of rocks. But you're trying to play with somebody's child. Teresa needs to just draw off and slap the shit out of her and beat the daylights out of her for that, because she should be like, you know what it's like to lose a child. So, don't be doing that. And, you know, she messing with JJ. You know, Jennifer don't play when it comes to them stupid kids of hers. I mean, but it was the scene with Teresa and JJ when they were saying their goodbyes at the pub. Their chemistry was fire.
The charts.
Fire. Their chemistry was amazing. But, you know, this is just a huge ripple effect. Like, Eve don't know the Pandora's box that she's opened. And I like the fact that they have, like, Ron is laying the groundwork because we know that Nicole's coming back because they announced it 20 years ago. We know, you know, we don't know how she's coming back. This is why, you know, that thread was just left out there. She's messed with JJ. It's just, you know,
And this is what Brady deserves. He's the one that started this. He took that boy out of this home that he knew, where Harold, Maggie, Victor, and anybody else who came in and out of that house took care of him, into a one-bedroom motel, thinking that the kid would have the same quality of life. Of course Teresa's going to come after him for that. I mean, that's how stupid Brady is. Brady had the perfect life. He was talking about squirting the pancake syrup on in just the right way. Bitch never made pancakes ever for that child. No, he did. So, you know, it's like you're ruining his life by trying to take him. First of all, you took him out of the mansion. That's a big step down for a kid who's been there for like 3 or 4 years. So he deserves it.
Jamie, in recent years, I'd sort of given up hope that true soap opera super couples could still possibly exist. But Ron is giving me hope that it is still possible with Ben and Sierra. And if Teresa were to ever return, JJ and Teresa, because both of them have been so compelling as couples. What are you thinking of both of those storylines coming back to the soap?
Well, I've still been watching Days. I've been watching Days and Bold and Y&R pretty regularly. Now, GH, I hadn't been, you know, watching as much. Mm. But no, Days I watch, you know, so I didn't come back to that for the podcast.
No, I mean, podcast.
Well, yeah, like, so, yeah. Oh.
Not having weight on in.
So what, tell me what couples I'm supposed to talk about.
Ben and Sierra. Ben and Sierra and JJ and Teresa.
Oh, Ben and Sierra are...
There's no real power couples. There's no power couples on any of the shows right now for the summer. And now Days is kind of put, you know, randomly these people together.
Ben and Sierra are sex, and they haven't had sex. I think they are gorgeous. They're romantic. They, you know, the aesthetic, the optics reminds me of a young Peter Reckle and a young Christian Alfonso, although different setup. You know, Bo was a bad boy, but he just rode a motorcycle and had been to the merchant
nobody
and would kiss a girl at the kissing booth, but you know, he wasn't a serial killer. But no, I'm loving it, and I love how dark and dangerous it is and how provocative and taboo it is.
Summer of Sin is perfect.
Yeah, it's like 5 or 6 years after Dexter was all the rage. That's why sometimes some soap pundits and people can, you know, when they're clutching their pearls, I'm like, right. Y'all watch all of this stuff on cable and eat it up. You know, the last 10, 15 years of peak TV have been about a mob family in Jersey, a meth lab
Arizona.
You know, Dexter was a damn serial killer, and all of them got to hunch and was with love interest. But damn, they got a serial killer hunching on Days of Our Lives, trying to hunch a girl. And I'm like, shut up. But but no, I love it. Now, I do have a bone to pick with everybody who is acting like Hope should not be acting the way she is. Hope Williams, Shantae Brady is acting supposed to act. Y'all getting on my nerves, acting like Hope should just be like, it's okay, boo. He is fine, girl.
I don't have a problem with Hope acting at all.
Hope isn't so much the issue, but Rafe, I want Bendis Rafe, just
killed. He killed Rafe's sister. He got a reason to hate this man. He killed his baby sister. Now he coming at his play daughter. Now, they don't know that Ben is good and really likes Sierra, but I'm sorry. You done tried to murk. Look, Rafe also damn near raised.
Wait a minute. Will, yes. He should be mad at because he killed him.
Will out. Now, I think Will liked it. But, you know, the whole... And the Bradys are acting the way that one should act when their 18-year-old daughter has been away in the cabin with a serial killer, and she comes up talking about.
But Josh's point about the hypocrisy between how they treat Abby and how they treat Ben.
Abigail and Hope are related, of course. It's exactly the way it would be.
Part of life. I'm a hypocrite, too. too. But I tell you what,
Abigail couldn't help herself.
I'll tell you how the scene would be if Jamie was writing it. I'd have told Ben 3 or 4 times, I want you to stay away from my daughter, but I love her. Rafe, can you give us the room? CJ, give me the room before I turn into Princess motherfucking Gina up in here. I'm going to pull out that damn Sharpie that I used to write on people's chests when I turned into Nighttime Hope, and I'm going to write it on his face. Stay the fuck away from my daughter. I'm going to kill you. I'm going to have Stefano put a microchip back in my ass because, you know, that's y'all are right. Hortons get away with shit because it wasn't me. It was a doppelganger. It wasn't me. I was hoping, like, see, you know, I can get, look, I'm still the chief of police, and I done been Nighttime Hope. I done been Princess Gina. I done been to the pen twice. Let me tell you, I was in the pen with T-Boss. I was in the pen with Gina Capwell once. I get off of shit because I'm Hope Williams. If you come near my daughter again, I'm going to gut you like a fish at the Braided Fish Market, which don't exist no more. That's how any mother would act, and it wouldn't be good soap if she didn't react this way.
What I'm missing in the middle of all this is the voice of reason, which is Eli. Eli, before this started, when Hope said, drop everything, because we're going to search for Sierra, Eli said, what you mean we're going to drop everything? We're in the middle of some cases. Why are we going to drop everything? Because the chief's daughter is gone.
And that's his family. That's his family. That's but Eli's family.
She wasn't even gone for 24 hours.
Hope would have said, asked and answered, because I'm the chief of police, cousin. And if you get your ornament to still be hanging on the tree at Christmas. First of all, why the Hortons put their tree up on Christmas Eve? That is always, I love that tradition. I'm like, y'all don't put y'all tree up.
There's some families
that ain't
that.
Us. We put our tree up at Thanksgiving Eve.
For real.
Maybe put your tree up Christmas Eve.
Anytime after Halloween, you're good to go.
Smash your ornament to the white meat. If you don't get out there and find your cousin, you know, and look, they close cousins too, because Julie is his big mama. And so, you know, Hope is Julie's stepdaughter and her sister. So you good to my daughter. That's what you do. And don't argue with me. That's what I'd have told him,
and
too.
See, that's what I needed to hear. I just needed Eli there to say it. Because right. Rafe and Hope going after him, almost acting like they're going to fix that report.
To that funeral. And I want to know why Lonnie had her back all out like that at that funeral. You know, all my grandmama sensibilities was like, we don't wear that to funerals. We wear this black dress with a veil.
It's like she wanted to be creeping with the deacon doing that. I'm like, you are ho.
Like you finna go to the cheating heart and play around a pool. You're going to bury your baby. Why are you dressed like that?
Yeah.
Your days were so much fun. And yeah, Jenny, Teresa, and JJ. Now look, I started to give Rod some shit on Twitter because when I found out what her exit story was, look, y'all think I go crazy about Rachel. I started going, oh, no! Lord Jesus, not Kimberly Donovan. Oh, Kim done went through too much. Y'all don't understand all the stuff Kimberly done been through. Kimberly went through the hysterical blindness.
They need to bring her son on. I told you this offline. Her son, Andrew, needs to come back, and he needs to bring revenge. He needs to, you know, avenge his son. To start with Brady, dumbass.
I'm going to tell you when I lost faith in my Shane Donovan, because Shane was the baddest of the super spies. But when Teresa was like, Danny, the drug lord done got me. And Shane was like, I can't help you out of this with Gina Teresa. Yeah,
Thank you.
The ISA might can help take down Victor when he running drugs and go to Miami and stop him, and we might can find prisms and stop the dragon from being a serial killer and everything else. But no, you're going to have to stay down there with El Chapo. But I chuckle with Jillian about this because I adore Cassie DePava is so Eve to me, but there are still those moments where I get a good chuckle because, you know, Charles Shaughnessy is Shane, and, you know, Cassie and Charles Shaughnessy aren't that far apart in age now. So when she was on the phone, oh, Danny! First of all, Steve Donovan was demo. I'm sitting there going, now I'm thinking about Eve. You know, number one, Eve was good and grown and hoeing by the time she found out. She was already a prostitute for Nick Corelli by the time she found out Shane was her daughter. She was good and grown, a daddy rather. Well, no, she was a teenager. They were in high school, she and Jennifer. She was hoeing, though, when she was a teenager. Her name was Eve Barone. And so hearing her act like, you know, they had this traditional... No, that wasn't Jillian. I was talking to my friend Ed about that.
Oh, and she... no.
Daddy, I'm so sorry to hear about Kimberly. I just got so chuckled because Charles Shaughnessy will come back to that show and say, "You my daughter now?"
But we get tickled when she talks to Brady and says, "You better tell your granddaddy to stay away, you know, stay away from my life," or whatever. Like, she ever call granddaddy? And, you know, that doesn't make sense. That sounds very
Kentucky. There are I am loving Cassie as Eve, but there are times when a little bit of Blair comes through.
Blair wasn't like that either. That's what I was just about to say.
Cassie
the Piper makes the when she recast as a role, because you know Blair was Asian. She is like, yeah, I know this character was Asian, but now she's gonna be from Kentucky. Yeah, I know Eve was a Midwestern hooker, but she finna call her dad Daddy.
Yup, she puts a country stank on them. Mm-hmm.
I would any other way. Love Cassie the Piper.
Oh, I love her too.
Let's talk about General Hospital. Two major storylines going on at the moment. Carly is locked up, and Dr. O and Nina's kidnapping of Heinrich has been revealed. Yeah. Mike, take a shot at either of those you prefer first, because it's so compelling.
Yeah, I don't know how. Mm-mm.
Okay. The thing with General Hospital is at least you know what you're going to get. There are no surprises.
Crap.
Well, you know, I don't know. It's a toss-up for me between YNR and General Hospital about which one I want to watch first or last based on how much torture it's going to cost me. But anyway, I don't like the story with Carly. The problem with General Hospital is they take way too long to bring things back around. I would have been okay with this fire happening to climax the story with Peter if it had happened a month ago, because the poor guy has been tied up. He's getting the Dusty Donovan treatment. Do you remember when Dusty was tied up by Emily and he couldn't go to the bathroom or change his clothes? That's all I've ever really thought about with this. Has gone on way, way too long. And I think the ending was appropriate. As much as Liesl was being Liesl, and as much as she can be over the top, she kind of sometimes saved this for me when she was trying to talk about why this miscreant should die. But I also love the moments when Michelle Stafford can talk about her brother and say things to try to convince her to come off the cliff by talking about how he wouldn't like her doing this. Nathan wasn't this kind of guy. So there's moments in there that it's okay, but it just went on way too long. And this Carly thing is going on way too long. And you know, I know that Michael and Chase and Jordan have this grand plan to try to bring this little waif girl down because she's such a terror, that I feel as though Michael will blow it, because Michael just is Michael's plans just don't really come to fruition very well.
He makes
Michael
his
doesn't strike
look like
me
a
as a type of guy.
Yes,
that,
agreed.
He doesn't strike me as a type of guy that can pull this off.
Well, not for nothing. I still like when he mentioned that he's Michael Corinthos after having been a quarter.
Oh my God! Get over that. Get over that.
This podcast 4 years and we still talk about that.
Yeah, my feeling is that Michael doesn't have the strength of character, and I think it's as much as Carly, as much as I've hated to watch Carly become the person that she is, to take this road that Michael has to fake his death is so cruel and horrible that I cannot imagine that Carly – the only thing that I'm going to like about it is that Carly will come out of this like a dragon and frickin' fry his ass for it. That's because that's what I want to see.
Oh, I don't think she will.
Carly faked her own death. She showed up as Tamara Braun.
This whole thing has been about Morgan for a while, and her whole cycle down the path has been about Morgan, and Nell has been doing this thing to try to think about Morgan, and now Michael's going to go do this. I just think it's – I mean, Carly – I'm not saying Carly doesn't deserve it, but –
That's what I see on Twitter a lot.
Remember when they were trying to run away from Stefan and she faked his death? Ooh, that was a prime time.
See, what I'm seeing on social media, though.
Let me just wrap this up and then you guys can. What I did like about Carly, the one thing I said about the Corinthos is that they have to own their stuff. They can't be like the mobster with a heart of gold. So what I really liked was Carly reminding all the people in the mental hospital who she is, who will take care of her, who will just come back and destroy everybody that's doing this stuff to her. I was okay with her owning that because that's what they have to do.
Well, she always does that. She always does that to
I think that, you know, those two storylines you mentioned, Luke, are perfect examples if this was a textbook of how to do this type of story right and how to do this type of story wrong. Yeah. I am very compelled by this Carly story. My 70-year-old auntie, my Aunt Shirley, well, she actually turned 70 this September, but we debate it over and over again because she hates Nell and she's like, I can't stand that little girl, but you're supposed to hate Nell. Nell is a love to hate.
Nell. I like that.
And I think she is great. And I told my aunt, I said, this is Carly's chickens coming home to roost. This is the same girl who, you know, AJ was on the wagon and she hunched him. And then she decided to torpedo his life to try to keep the lie that that was Tony's baby. And everything Carly has done since she first showed up in this town to go after Bobby, because Bobby put her up for adoption, this is the perfect culmination of that. Now, when they launched the story, we all were like, but wait, it doesn't make sense why Frank's daughter would hate Carly and, you know, why she would be a match for Jocelyn's kidney. None of that. The origin story of Nell made no sense. But Nell has morphed into a delicious villain who, when she, like, plays with, you know, everybody in Michael's orbit, like, now she's playing with Drew. I love the fact that Drew and Michael and Nell are all living in the Quartermain mansion. You know, we've got a new generation of Quartermains. This reminds me of when AJ married Carly, even though he really couldn't stand her at that point, but he was doing what he had to do. Now, yeah, the whole thing about Nell being a murderess, I don't think they had to go that route. That's a bit much, although I do appreciate the super cute new cop person who I don't know who he is, but, you know, I think, you know, and he's all like, gotta stop her because I couldn't stop her before. And I'm like, I don't know you, but you're adorable. You're super cute, so you can stay. Yes, I'm talking in my Kourtney Kardashian voice, but, you know, I think he's cute. But the other storyline and why it doesn't work for me is I'm like Mariah Carey. I don't know Peter. Who is Peter? Why do I care if Peter's tied up? The whole reason for the perils of Pauline to work as a story trope is that we care about Pauline. So we want somebody to get there to undo Pauline from the railroad crossing before the train comes. No one cares about Peter, but the person who hired him.
Except for he's Maxie's best friend, apparently.
No one cares about this character. No one cares about the fact that he killed Nathan. No one cares. I don't care if he dies. Like, I don't.
That's just a prime example of them trying to redeem him, to force fans into liking him because he's not liked.
They're trying to do the same thing to him.
This character isn't. You already, you know, and they did that with, you know, what's his butt too, Will Corning. Yeah, it's like, who cares? I mean, I don't know why when he's sitting there, I can't walk. I'm like, Phyllis Robiloti, get your ass up there for you burn up in this house, girl. You know, I don't care about. I mean, I barely care about Nina. I love Michelle Stafford, but I could take Nina or leave her. So I barely just got to where I care about Nina enough. So Obrecht, of all these people, is the one I consider the most essential to the show at this point. And I'm like, okay, Obrecht is out, so I'm good, you know. But I don't care that he killed what's his name so he could go play Mr. Darcy some more on Hallmark. None of this matters to me. Maxie and Lulu are best friends again and having fried chicken.
Jillian, what did you think of these two stories? Yes, we won't go into the fried chicken. Jillian, what did you think of these two stories?
With the Peter storyline, you could tell this is being done so that you could garner sympathy for Peter and you could start liking him, and this is their slow way of redeeming him. Like, if you're going to bring him on and he's going to be a villain, stick with it. Stop trying. Yeah, fans don't like him because
he stole the chicken.
No, shut up. Go on mute. No, yeah, fans
don't like him. He's going to because he hasn't eaten for 6 weeks.
Shush. Yeah, fans don't like him.
Or taking a shit, apparently. Don't like him
because you retconned his origin. You
phase on.
Right. They don't
Anna.
Like that. So if you had any sense, you would fix that component. You would fix that component for that to work. If he's going to be a villain, he needs to stay a villain. That's the same thing with Valentine. People didn't like Valentine. He was a villain because he killed Nicholas. Stick with it. Stop this whole, oh, I was Quasimodo. I was deformed. Oh. I have a hangnail. Oh, she put it on me and then told me.
And now he and Nina go through more changes than a Keith Sweat album.
Yes.
Who's Keith Sweat?
That's for the next 10 years of education. We'll start that lesson. We'll start 90s R&B later.
Yeah. If you're going to, like, they do too much. What I've noticed with GH, they do too much. Oh, we see the fans don't like it, so let's make him good again. It's like, no.
Let's not know when to call a day. Brad Bell,
right.
Look at here. That's one thing you can say about Brad Bell. If the overwhelming fan sentiment is negative, he'd have put 3 bullets in Valentine and Enrique on a Monday and Tuesday. Some new black people would have showed up in town to move into their apartment, to move into Windermere. You know, Brad don't mess around with the when things ain't going right. Brad would have put a bullet in Enrique and Valentine and St. Patrick and everybody else. He don't mess around, but GH is like,
they're digging their heels.
They're like Valentine and Peter.
They're trying to go by that old Jill Farren Phelps mantra, because I remember in an interview, Jill Farren Phelps said in an interview, she said she learned from a quote unquote old timer that if the fans are mad, that means that you're doing something, and you know, she's trying to say that if the fans don't like it, then obviously you're doing something right. And it's like, no, your rating. Let me finish. Your ratings are reflecting that the fans do not like.
This is where she thinks that when people say that, they think they're creating an Abby Fairgate or J.R. Ewing,
love-hate
character. Oh, the fans hate this character. No. It's not love to hate. It's not a delicious hate where people are getting around the water cooler and going, girl, did you see what Kristen Shepherd did last night on Dallas? No, we just hate Peter. We just really hate and despise him. And we fast forward when he come on the TV.
It's Cersei versus Joffrey.
Who?
He's gone into
Cersei versus Joffrey.
No. People,
I love to hate both of them.
Fans love to hate Cersei, and that was the same. I don't even watch Game of Thrones, and they love to hate Joffrey. People just don't fucking like Peter and Palpatine.
The worst thing you can do with a quote unquote villain or complex character is to inspire, and that's what I feel about both Valentine and Peter. You know, like, I don't get why. You know, sometimes I sit and think, what if Tom Pelfrey was playing? I said this to Jillian. She said she would still hate it because she's a diehard Anna fan and doesn't like what they've done to the history. But I'm like, what if it was somebody like Tom Pelfrey?
Nope.
If give me suds as he's playing this evil Faison child of Anna's. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, me? Jillian and I had a...
Well, why couldn't have he just been Faison's child without it being Anna?
I'm saying this, look, Jillian and I talked about this, and I say this all the time. For me, when you retcon history, you have to damn sure make it good. Like, mm-hmm. Kendall Hart was there is no denying she's a beloved retcon of history, but Erica Shantakiki Kane didn't have no baby at the start of that show. She wasn't traumatized about no rape at the start of that show. She was like, oh, mama, here come your old sorry friend. What was that man named Mike Larry? Neil? What was that man used to come over? He was somebody else in town, daddy. But she was like, she ended up screwing him years later. Nick! Ugh, why he over here? I'm trying to go to Hollywood and Vine one day, and I want Phil Brent to like me, but he liked that old sorry Martin girl. Erica was living her best life and ready to get out of Pine Valley, but they retconned it to say, oh no, when she was 14, her daddy was out there, and she went to visit her daddy, and some old man hunched her and bothered her, and she had a baby and forgot all about it. And I remember the soap opera press at the time was like, this is ridiculous. We have been watching this show since 1970. There has been no mention, just like the stuff we're saying now. There's been no mention of no baby. There's been nothing.
No, but I mean, with that Erica thing, I give it leeway because what I'm saying though is
at that time, we are now the soap critics of this day, and we are like, this is not realistic. This is not. That was a complete retcon, and the soap critics of the day lost their minds until Sarah Michelle Gellar put all of her foot into that role, and it was like, okay, we buy it. For me, if the actor is strong enough and the story is compelling enough, and he was coming in like the way Jonathan was like, hey, I see that I got a sister named Mara. Maybe I should go pay her a visit. And them Lewis boys whooped that ass because they knew he was being nasty. You know, if this boy came on like, oh, so I got a sister named Robin and a little niece. Maybe I need, you know, if he was allowed to be a complete asshole, not just an asshole at the beginning in the whole I'm writing a book story, but now that, you know, y'all trying to keep me on the show, let's make me nice. If he was allowed to be a delicious, unapologetic asshole in the vein of Tom Pelfrey or what's the pretty boy we love so much from Days? Because if that wasn't a retcon, James Scott, EJ, yeah. Hell, Will was a teenage boy when EJ was born, or not a teenage boy, but he was a big lad. And they brought EJ back older than everybody. I mean, if the actor works, we tend to put up with way more than when, you know. And I liked Wes Ramsey on Guiding Light. I know a lot of people are like, oh, my God. I think he's a good actor, but he has not brought anything to this role where I'm like,
no.
I liked him on Charmed. I liked him on Guiding Light. But
he was cool on Days, too. He was on Days, too.
A trifecta. I'm like, I don't know why I'm supposed to care about this character. Why it would maybe if, because look, Stefano has had so many ridiculous children that we never knew of. Surprise, this one's Stefano's, too. Surprise, but Stefano was there for most of them, except for this latest with Stefan, but they brought back Louise Sorrell to introduce him. It's like, why kill Faison if you're going to... And then, like, why isn't Anna in the end of this story? Like, I guess... I know Fanola goes on vacation for the summer.
She's on vacation, yeah.
Like, trying to save her...
But you would think that your timing, if you're writing this out, that you would figure out the timing.
But Jillian has the best solution. She said it to me before. I don't know if she's already said it on the podcast.
What?
But they need to go ahead and say that this is Alex Devane's baby.
Yes.
That's just suppose
yes.
I just
yes,
go
what
ahead.
What they should do is say that Anna and Alex were the first test cases for that brain mapping shit, and that all of those thoughts that she had were Alex's, and that's Alex's kid. Because this could also be
Valentine's kid. Valentine and Alex,
because
they had a
two. No, this is
the part because then that gets him out of the Faison orbit.
Well, I got you, Mike. That's cool. This is the one thing that annoys me with that, too, because this is why I kind of like that, Mike, because when Faison said to Oprah, and Faison, when you heard that Oprah and Faison had a kid, Faison always said he wanted a boy. He wanted a boy. He wanted a boy. They retconned that. They had Faison. They had Liesl saying, oh, she could have given him a boy. Then they had her give him a boy, but I had to hide him away because of you. It's the same thing with Heinrich.
He always wanted. She used to tell Britt, I wish you were a boy. Yeah, it just that.
And then they also had him say, you know, he always said he wanted a boy to take on his legacy. But then you have them saying, oh, he knew that he had a son, but he couldn't stand the son because of the son's mother. And it's like, wait a minute. You just retconned. That's another retcon that frustrated me. They retconned a retcon in the middle.
And why couldn't West look, if you want to hire Laura Wright's boyfriend, that's fine. Why couldn't he just be Steven Lars Weber? Why does everything have to be so complicated with GH? What was that Avril Lavigne? What are you going to do and make things so complicated? I'm like, seriously, just give the fans a little teaspoon of what they want and you'll get some, well, you'll get some Emmys, you'll get some love, and it's just common
you
good story.
A lot of like,
I don't think you'd get Emmys for this story,
no, just,
even if
no,
it was
I'm talking,
a,
I'm talking GH overall.
He like, could have been Dylan Quartermain.
Since they didn't like the last one. Why does they have to
right,
be so
okay.
Byzantine and, oh, he's going to be Anna's child with Faison that we never knew of, and the clock and the gizmo and the little boy that Jake is going to have the receptacle, the chimera is going to explode. We don't know.
Chupacabra, yeah.
And then, like, okay, even with Liz, like Liz's story, I'm so proud of GH for introducing a transgender character, but you noticed it got no buzz. Back in the day, if you introduced a gay storyline right, you got GLAAD Awards, you got every gay magazine. They don't do that anymore because now LGBT representation is really taking on a thought-provoking and thought process, which back in, you know, Bianca, there were many thought gay storylines.
Dark.
But now, like,
I'm just saying, I mean, that was a character
of
like this.
To come up with.
But you know,
right? Well, but, no, but I, but he mentions Bianca. That was one of Bianca's stories.
But it's like, no, if you're gonna have a story with Liz and a transgender friend that we know, I mean, just go balls to the walls. Grey's Anatomy just did a story with a trans man. You really want to shock me and make me go, oh my god? Don't have Liz open the door and it's, oh, it's you, person the audience has never heard of because I've been on this show for 20 years and we don't discuss before I moved here to live with Graham. Best friend I've never talked about. Oh, my God, you're trans. This is so wild. No, you want to go.
And she disappears and never see her again.
The episode's gone.
Damn door. And your former sister, Sarah, is there calling herself Seth. That's no. Seth. Hi, Liz. Hi, do I know you? It's me.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yes.
Back, and then Liz is like, I don't understand. You was hot in the ass for Nicholas and Lucky. That was just me trying to find myself. I always knew I was different. Boom! And then she's a doctor. He's a doctor on staff. You make it someone we care about. Or it could have been, you know, Tommy.
Tommy Hardy could have been Thomasina Hardy.
He could have come back. She could
I like it, though. I like it.
They don't know this girl. I mean, we don't know her. We don't know her. Either.
Jamie.
Well, you were talking
Jamie,
about.
You haven't been on it. You
these
haven't.
People. You haven't, who cares? I do like little King being caught up in the Me Too storyline with Max holding her with his old. But,
Jamie. We don't. You haven't been on a podcast for a while, and we don't want to have you get a coronary on this one. But I have a couple requests from listeners as our final thing to wrap this up. I have a request from a longtime listener, Candace, who we all know on Twitter. She wants you to do your CBS
We're gonna kill Hillary. We got the
growth. It's gonna have synergy. It's gonna have synergy, child.
We're number one.
Sharon Osbourne's gonna weigh in on if Meghan Markle's daddy should be committed. We're CBS Daytime number one.
You're such an.
And the other thing that I was going to suggest, because I know many of our fans love it, and you aren't going to be on a podcast for a while, but have you ran into Nikki Newman recently?
Well, you know, I was at the Colonnade Room just the other day because Catherine and I were planning a very, very important charity event.
You rushing us for this? I want him to do everybody get down. Fuck.
Once Miguel brought over our cocktail, suddenly we forgot what the charitable event was about. But then Gina Roma started singing a song, and I decided to get up on my pole.
Oh, I don't need to play that song anymore. Oh, damn. Just,
get off the pole, Nikki. I told you, you cannot do that anymore. You're the mother of my children. Boop-a-doo, boop-a-doo.
Yo, that was the worst thing. He kept saying a pole. I'm like, boy, she wasn't on no pole. She was a damn fan dancer, if you like the clip.
Sally! Eve! Get down! Everybody get down! Ben is out of jail! Get down!
And on that note, we would encourage you to comment on this episode at DaytimeConfidential.com. Let us know your favorite memories from the past 900 episodes. Here's to 900 more.
And we thank you for listening. Best word on every one of those podcasts. Got that?
Oh, my Jack. God.
That's right. Until next time, Lena, so long.
You are my way.
No, that's, no. You don't have the rights for that.
Oh, shit, that's right.